Chapter 9. The primordial law of the Gnostic mysteries. We will now discuss the fifth book of Hermes Trismegistus. The beginning is a confession of the true love for God and of true love for all mankind as the guiding principle for a truly liberating life. This shows clearly that the familiar evangelical story that we find in the Bible, and which is related to the above, is unmistakably hermetic. Someone came to Jesus and asked, "Which is the first and foremost commandment?" The answer was, "Love God above all, and your neighbor as yourself. This is the whole law and the prophets. This is the key to the door which leads to liberating life." It is a hermetic axiom. We will now investigate this inescapable fact in order to enable you to test yourself on the basis of this standard. Love God above all and your neighbor as yourself. Do you fulfill this primordial law of the Gnostic mysteries? You will perhaps reply with a lamentation which is as old as the dialectical world itself. This complaint is heard in the second verse of the text. "But as there is nothing real and true, Father, what should a man do to live in the right manner?" How can we comply with the classical primordial law when this world is like it is? We do not need to describe the nature of our dialectical world order as we have so often done before. We are at present indeed confronted with so many dark clouds that we need only mention this lamentation. You know about it, because it is part of you. Everyone knows this lamentation from his own life's experience. If someone decides to follow faithfully the instructions of the primordial Gnostic law, he will very soon find that he meets great obstacles. If, for example, you consider the love for your ego, the self-love which is always predominant, if you think of the hatred which is the result of all self-maintenance, of the countless different norms in life, by far the majority of which will fill you with great repulsion, if you think of the countless tendencies which frighten you, then without doubt the perfect love of your fellow men, exercised spontaneously, will meet numerous misgivings and insuperable obstacles within you. What should we do to achieve a correct balance with the primordial Gnostic law and receive the key to liberating life? Hermes said that we, who live in a world of physical phenomena, should try to penetrate to what lies behind them. Then you will understand your fellow men and be able to help them. You must try to obtain knowledge of how it happened that man fell and degenerated to this present state of life and behavior. Once you possess this wisdom, which is not intellectual knowledge but first-hand inner wisdom, as a property that streams throughout your whole being and which you cannot ignore, you will love your neighbor, that is, mankind as a whole, and you will also understand the nobility of your deeper self. To come to this wisdom, you will have to lead, as Hermes put it, a God-serving life. You will have to become pious. He who is truly pious will love wisdom beyond all measure, for without love of wisdom it is impossible to reach the highest piety. So we have to ask ourselves what piety means as a way to arrive at wisdom, as a method of raising us to the arch gnosis. The answer might appear to be simple, and you could say, "I know what piety is, I know perfectly well what it means." You would then tend to continue and devote your attention to other aspects of the Hermetic philosophy, but do you really know what a God-serving and pious life is? If you know it so well, and if you lead such a life, may we then ask, what are the results? Results which, as Hermes confirmed, would have placed you in the midst of the absolute wisdom of the Mercury consciousness. For piety is the key to wisdom. When we speak of a pious life, we often think too much of what is normally considered to be a religious life. Throughout the centuries, mystics have buried us under various statements concerning piety. Such virtue is considered to be connected with a life in a closed cell and with many self-chastisements and other torments, or, in general, with the life of religious people who fulfill their religious duties very faithfully and conscientiously. There are millions of such people, and there always have been. But where then is the truth, the liberating truth, which must necessarily be the result of a pious life? He who has gained insight into the essence of the All and has learned to understand how, by whom, and for whose sake everything has been joined to form an order, will give thanks for all this to God, the Demiurge, the Architect of the world, the All-Bountiful Father who surrounds him with benefaction and guards him faithfully. By giving thanks he will become devout, and by his piety he will also know where truth is and who it is. Because of this insight, his devout directedness will continually increase. Almost all the pupils of the young Gnosis possess the seriousness required for pupilship. If the school were to find that this is not the case in some pupil, he would have to leave the school. Serious pupilship and a religious life in a church or sect have the same value. They are at best a basis on which to begin. They form the foundation stone. However, the miserable thing is that many place themselves on this stone and remain standing there or sit down on it, laboring under the delusion that a certain religiosity or an outwardly serious pupilship are sufficient for liberating life or for wisdom. He who clings to a certain religious form of expression or associates with a habitual pupilship will unavoidably crystallize. Because of this crystallization, it will become increasingly difficult for the light to approach such a pupil. Therefore, this kind of pupilship, as it is sometimes understood, involves an enormous danger. As soon as the foundation stone has been laid, building must begin. The building must rise into space. Something will have to be realized which did not previously exist, and when it is realized, it must be used. Consequently, religiosity and devoutness are entirely different from piety. The fifth book of Hermes is, as you will have seen, part of a dialogue between Hermes and Tat, or Tatius. The name Tat, or Tatius, implies kingship, of being called to kingship, of becoming a higher, true man. Tat is told that the key to becoming a true man lies in piety, that is, in the courage to persevere in the face of impediments against all opposition, to persevere in spite of what people may say and in spite of the situations and difficulties that may be gathering around you. If you cannot summon up this courage, if you do not possess this perseverance, if you do not desire to break through, you will never attain wisdom, never arrive at love for mankind in the sense of the primordial law of the Gnosis. To love God above all means to persevere in spite of everything, even if it sometimes does not suit you with respect to your everyday life. The wisdom that is of God will come to you if you show this courage of conviction consistently. Then you will have passed the gate. If you really dare to entrust yourself to the mighty light force of the Gnosis in perfect sincerity and push all the difficulties aside without accepting them, without acknowledging them, you will have passed the gate. Then the wisdom which is of God will come over you, and this wisdom is always identical with love which is in everyone and for everyone. Just think of the first two streams of the universal seven light. The first stream of manifestation of the divine fullness is followed immediately by the stream of universal love. And if you have understood this, you will realize that it gives you the key to all that is good. The Gnosis comes to you and offers you the key to the secret of liberating life. If you can see this, you will know that nothing can hinder you on the path, provided you invariably and consistently practice piety. However, if you do not want to use this key, you will achieve nothing at all, nothing more than an honest bourgeois pupilship as Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so. Then your pupilship will be nothing but a kind of furnishing and a camouflage for your dreary miserable, dialectical existence. These problems, if you want to call them such, are very old. For example, just read the letter of James, in which the emphasis is placed on action, which means on that element of your pupilship with which you are able to break through to attainment. However, do not be mistaken again. Many think themselves to be not only religious but pious as well. They may tell us, haven't we provided proof in the past years? Aren't we loyal in every respect? Haven't we made available our money and our property, our time, health, and diligence? The answer will have to be, but however magnificent and splendid this may be, have you never tried to make a compromise? Have you never consciously put off necessary things? Have you never, when you heard the inner voice say, you'll have to take part in this, simply left it unanswered on account of all sorts of dialectical motives? The gnosis demands your whole self. The gnosis does not care about the circumstances of your everyday life. It cannot do so, nor is it allowed to do so. Has it not been so that just when you stopped doing what you were required to do, piety was about to manifest itself within you? That is why in the Bible these things are always explained with the utmost clarity. Just listen to what Jesus told his disciples. Anyone who prefers father and mother to me is not worthy of me. Anyone who prefers son or daughter to me is not worthy of me. Anyone who does not take up his cross and follow in my footsteps is not worthy of me. Anyone who finds his life will lose it, but anyone who loses his life for my sake will find it. Should you prefer quotations from world literature, think of the well-known Ibsen principle, all or nothing. Do you have the courage to follow this advice? It does require courage, the courage of piety, instead of sanctimoniousness or bourgeois excuses. That is what the gnosis demands of you. It is the contents of the dialogue between Hermes and Tat. Tat was a seeker, and Hermes did not keep him busy with mystical talk. Hermes touched the weak points of seeking man with the sword of his words. The heart must be opened for the Gnostic light. The spiritual school never tires of telling its pupils about this. You will only be able to do this in true piety. It is only in this way that you will be able to open your hearts for the radiations of the seven spirit. The fifth book of Hermes Trismegistus points this out at the beginning. It is only in this way, by a truly God-serving life, that you can settle your account with Nemesis. If you reject such a life practice, fate will follow you in spite of your so-called serious pupilship. Then you will continue to fall from one trouble into another. No sooner will you have overcome one difficulty or recovered from whatever blow, than vexation will begin again the very next day, only in a different form. That is how things are in dialectical nature. However, if you open your heart in true piety for the light of the gnosis, the light will enter and you will arise in wisdom. And without wisdom, the sublimity of piety cannot be contemplated. If you really want to be a pupil of the Gnostic spiritual school, step over the frontier into the circle of eternity. Only when you have passed this frontier will you truly stand on the carpet. Then you will be able to link yourself with the triangle and the square, with the Holy Seven Spirit.